Hello and welcome to The Property Exchange, your guide to the latest news, views and opinions in residential property, with Winkworth, with you every step of the way in the property market. Your host is writer and commentator Anne Ashworth.
Welcome to the Property Exchange podcast. It's spring, so we're headed to the countryside to explore what's happening in the rural market. In this episode, we're going to be exploring the country house market, taking a look at the demand for mansions, old vicarages, and cottages. The pandemic sparked a flight out of town for green space and a different pace of life. Are as many people still swapping the bright lights for rolling hills and village greens? And if so, what kind of properties are they seeking? We'll be asking if historic houses are in demand and in what areas, and get some views on which part of the country is the chicest place to buy a weekend bolt hole. Has the ability to work from home changed what people want in a property? Is the office suite in the grounds the new must-have? And what is the future for the countryside? Are we doing enough to protect it for generations to come? To answer all these questions, I'm joined by Dominic Agace, Chief Executive of Winkworth, by Andrew Beechnow of Winkworth's Petersfield office, and by a special guest, Mark Hedges, Editor of Country Life. Great that you can join us. First to you, Dominic. What's your sense of the mood in the country house market now that spring is here?
So I think across the UK, this is a pretty positive start to the year and the housing market in the country houses included. So we've seen applicants ahead of this time last year, sort of 9% or so registering looking for country houses. So I think that's a great start. Some people have said spring's a bit early, which is perhaps a bit optimistic because obviously the key season is ahead of us. But no, I think they're, you know, they are always popular, and now that I think we've sort of passed quite a difficult year, hopefully that sort of popularity will be reinforced this year and going forward.
And how are prices in rural areas performing relative to towns and cities?
I suppose you have to look at last year, really. It's sort of too soon this year to start to talk on that front. I think they went up a huge amount. The whole dynamic of the UK changed over the last few years, which has always been much talked about. And I think what's lasting is a more fluid relationship between cities and country and working from home. So I think we've had a bit of a sort of comeback. You know, obviously they were 25% up, some of these prices, where everyone rushed and thought life was permanently changing to being able to live in beautiful scenery in the countryside. And now perhaps there's a sort of halfway house that's being established where there's some days from home and some days back in the office. And as a result, there's never to be a little bit of disinflation, would one say. So I think we probably saw, you know, country houses come off sort of 4 to 5%. But that is in the context of very significant rises of sort of 20+% since the pandemic. So I think that sort of slight reflects a slight easing. But going forward, as I say, they are treasured assets when people get there into their country house, and I think they will remain a very popular part of the property market.
Let's talk about where's the best place to invest. Do people think it's great to be putting money into the shires at the moment, or seeing towns and cities as a longer-term, better investment?
So I think there's probably three categories, actually. There's the cities and towns, which, I mean, traditionally, going back to the traditional market, these, you know, they traded far less, the country rural properties, than the cities, and the action for transactions and you know, employment was obviously in, you know, regional cities and the like. And so they're always naturally busier. But, you know, when they did come up, they're sort of very popular to get the one with the right spot that hasn't been sold for sort of 40 years. So I think that's the dynamic. There's also the coastal properties, of course, which I suppose seem to be even more sought after. I think the average price of a coastal property is £1,000 a square foot now, and the sort of average price for country ones around £600 a square foot. So they're three different types. I think people sort of live worked, live and work in cities and require accommodation to do so. But obviously everyone aspires to probably living in the country.
Now, Property Exchange podcast fans know that you've got some pretty firm views on what makes the ideal suburb. So what makes the ideal village? Does it need a gastropub, a coffee shop?
So I spent a couple of weeks last summer in a village that I think got pretty close. So it was a place called Woolston, which is by the Uffington White Horse, which is the oldest white horse in the UK. And I think that pretty much had it all. So if I sort of think of that, that might guide my thoughts. It had a pub, a very old pub, with local landlady and landlord running it. So that sort of community feel. It had a village shop, and it had a hill you could walk up. So I thought that was a nice addition, a village with a hill to walk on at your weekends or every morning with your dogs.
So these are the Agace rules. A great pub, a hill.
A church. I think the church is important.
A church, a shop.
Yes.
That's all you need. Okay.
Yeah, probably a WhatsApp group for the community feel. So, I was looking at this village, but I think some of those things are what people look for. They're looking for the village idol, aren't they? So, and those are the features, I think, of them.
Now, I'm going to ask you something a bit personal. Are you a townie, Dominic, or do you secretly dream of moving out to the country?
So I sadly have to confess that I was born in London. So I'm a sort of Londoner by birth and lived there. But I think it's time of life and different features, isn't it? I'd love to live in the country. It would be amazing. And obviously bringing up children and having that sort of freedom to open the door and boot them out would be great. But at the moment, I sort of work and life keeps me in London. But one day I would love to make the move, yes.
Now, next to you, Andrew, you're based in Petersfield in Hampshire. Tell us all about this beautiful location and the surrounding villages with their incredibly rich history.
Petersfield is in the heart of the South Downs National Park. It's a direct train to London Waterloo in about an hour. Equidistance between Guildford and Portsmouth, so it's perfect for that commuter market. And yet it's got fantastic schooling, so it does seem to appeal to anyone and everyone.
Now, there's Petersfield, but the stars are the villages around the town.
Yeah, there are some glorious, glorious villages, many of which have wonderful amenities, as Dominic touched upon earlier, with shops, schools, churches.
Now, give us the names of some of these gorgeous villages.
The likes of Selborne is very popular, the former home of Gilbert White, who was a forerunner to Darwin, a local vicar. South Harting has got fantastic amenities in terms of a village shop, pub, school. And it's on the base of the South Downs Way, so fantastic for outdoor pursuits. Rogate, East and West Meon, all of which are very popular.
And very pretty. So I'm shopping for a house in the Petersfield area. What kind of price would I need to pay for a gorgeous family house with, say, 4 or 5 bedrooms?
4 or 5 bedrooms in decent land. By decent land, I mean minimum of 1-2 acres. I think you'd be talking upwards of $1.5 million.
And a period property, would I find, or...?
Yes, there are modern, there are period homes. So we're selling a watermill in Sheets, which is just on the fringe of Petersfield. It's incredibly pretty, and the only thing you can hear is running water. But yet you've still got the accessibility to everything within Petersfield town.
So it's the ideal mix of convenience and rural splendour.
Exactly right, yes.
Now, if I had a bigger budget, would there be something for me in a substantial amount of acres with outbuildings? Are there any properties of that type on offer?
It's a little early in the season. Personally, at the moment, we don't. But that doesn't mean to say we're expecting to be instructed on a few things in the coming weeks. This time of year, the gardens don't look their best. And of course, a lot of people, where you've got outdoor features, a lot of people want to wait and wait for things to mature in terms of leaf.
People who've moved out of London can often find that it's a little tricky to integrate into village life or smaller town life, that they're seen as interlopers. What would be your advice to anybody in that situation? How do you ensure that you're welcomed into a rural community?
I think personally, you get very much out what you put in. Most villages would have the local horticultural society or a cinema club, tennis club. And I just would recommend anyone to enjoy and join those environments, those activities.
And support the local pub, maybe go to the church?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a fantastic networking source of meeting new friends.
And indeed, there are many gorgeous walks around your part of the world in which one can meet people with their dogs.
Yeah, absolutely. In the heart of the South Downs National Park, we've got South Downs Way that runs along the ridge of the South Downs, so from the eastern fringe of Winchester right across to, well, towards Eastbourne.
So one can walk and one is also easily in town. Now, I asked Dominic where his heart really lay, and I'm going to ask you the same question. Do you really passionately love the countryside, or do you dream of the bright lights of London?
I was very much brought up in a rural location. I currently live in Winchester, and it's quite nice to have the divide between work and home. So I don't know whether I would sacrifice the convenience of city living.
And Winchester, again, another place within fairly easy reach of Petersfield.
Yeah, it's within 30 minutes in the car.
Well, thank you to that. Now, on our rural ride, I'm turning now to Mark, who is editor of Country Life. I'm not going to be the first to have said this, am I? But you're called Mark Hedges and you're editor of Country Life. Is that the best example ever of nominative determinism?
I think it's called an aptonym, isn't it? What happened a couple of years ago, I was invited to Highgrove to go hedge laying with the king, whether he was the Prince of Wales. And he thought it was absolutely hilarious. If he told one person, he told every person that we met that day. I think it basically meant that my family somewhere in the past, sort of, we lived in a hedge. It's not terribly glamorous, but it certainly fits with editing, being editor-in-chief of Country Life.
It truly is the perfect name. And your publication, Country Life, how long has it been the essential guide to the best properties on the market in rural areas?
Well, it was launched in 1897 when sort of Queen Victoria is still on the throne. So it's, I think that's a bit of mass, 127 years. It very quickly became fairly dominant in the countryside properties. Certainly is for well over a century, it has been the place where the greater countryside rural properties. I mean, in 1915, we sold Stonehenge through the magazine. It's has the most remarkable history entwined with all things rural. It's an extraordinary thing. It's a weekly magazine. We covered a lot of ground. It's quite good fun. But the property has always been the most important part of the advertising. It is, some people refer to it, I think, very childishly as property porn, but it is rather fun to have a look at it all.
So I'm sitting there at my coffee table, I'm going through Country Life thinking, I'm a townie, maybe I'd like to move out. But are there some people who are just fundamentally unsuited to the rural life and should just stay put in town?
Oh, definitely. I mean, definitely. The countryside is not perfect. It smells a bit, actually, on occasion. And for goodness sake, don't tell any of the locals that you thought it was a bit smelly. They will immediately see you out. If you need to get your Uber Eats, they don't really deliver to hamlets. You have to bear in mind there is always, if you work in, this is really the big change, but if you have to go to London or a big city every day, there is a commute. And you have to factor that in. Now, the great change, obviously, is that not everyone is commuting 5 days a week to London. We're just about to do an article which the working title is Happy Twats. And what I mean by twat is people who work Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday in London. And that gives an enormous scope to where you can choose to live. There was, for many years, was referred to as the golden hour. So people like places like Petersfield, Winchester, sort of this circle. It's actually not a perfect circle because the train lines are faster in some areas than others. But this sort of golden hour of how to get into London was really, you saw a price spike if you lived within that hour. Now all that has changed a little bit more because if you've only got to go to London or Birmingham two or three times a week, actually your commute can, you can afford for it to be longer, you get an awful lot more money for your house, and people are rethinking where they want to live.
So if I've rethought where I want to live and I've moved to the country, then I need to be aware that about those unspoken codes about how to behave, what to wear, what not to say. What's the biggest mistake townies tend to make when they land in a lovely village?
It's funny. When I moved a couple of years ago, and I turned up, and a neighbour came up to me and said, "We don't much want your sort here. You don't know anything about the countryside," which is slightly ironic, editing Country Life, because I don't know much, but I do know a bit about it. I think the key things that are very different is, quite frankly, people don't want to know how much you earn. The truth is that, you know, it's quite competitive. Everyone's sort of, you know, I've got a shinier car than you or whatever. Nobody's interested in what you earn, so don't try and tell them. And to be honest, your cleaner will have seen your bank statement and told them anyway. So you don't need to sort of worry about that. You do need three-line whip. It's the end of life if you don't attend the village fete. And the best thing, knowing most villagers, is to volunteer for the bottle stall. You immediately meet everyone in the village. You've got to, you know, brush up on your weather lore. It does matter. I know we've had tremendous amounts of rain recently, but we do quite want it to rain in April so the crops grow. You have to understand that farming matters. It's all great. We very much like all the sort of little birds and everything like that, but it is a balance. We do need to feed ourselves as well. So don't get too grumpy if you're behind a tractor. For goodness sake, use the village shop. It actually adds value to your own property if you have a village shop near you. And if you don't use it, you might lose it. If you lose it by not using it, the value of your property will go down. So absolutely have to do that. Get a dog. You won't know anyone's names in the village, but you'll know the names of their dog because everyone's yelling at them to come back. So that's a way of interacting with everyone. Don't expect a latte. Coffee is not a big thing. I've written in the past that, you know, if a village shop could work out how to make a latte, they would make a fortune with all the people, especially who moved out around the pandemic, but they can't. And they won't. So make your own lattes. But embrace it, because why do you want to go to the countryside? There are reasons to be in Winchester, because it has a very nice cinema and it has all, you know, great cathedral and whatever. If you want to move to the countryside, you need to embrace it. You need to love the fact that, our skin is actually impermeable. It will rain. You won't get wet through, but you just buy good clothes, make the most of it, understand the seasons. It's really worth trying to understand and sort of work out 10 or a dozen wildflowers, and it becomes something that's very familiar and enjoyable.
So mind your P's and Q's, get a dog, go to the local shop, and brush up on your botany. Right. Now, I know we're all shouldn't think that some parts of the country are more trendy than others, but yet, let's face it, they are. So what would we say the two top places are? The Cotswolds, especially the bits close to the Soho Farmhouse Club, and Norfolk, the bits near Sandring or Amnor Hall, which is the country house of the Prince and Princess of Wales. Would you say those were the top two trendiest locations?
Certainly in Country Life's history, there used to be more properties in Hampshire than there were appeared. And now the Cotswolds is very much that. There's so much demand, we do two Cotswolds issues a year. The Cotswolds is amazingly, I was there at the weekend, it was my birthday and we all went up there. Not since I lost control of a Bentley on a racetrack in California have I been as terrified in a car as going to the Daylesford car park. There were Teslas, and there was Range Rovers doing sort of stunt turns to try and grab the remaining parking spaces. It is incredibly trendy. Before you talk to anyone, you can just see by the nature of the cars that it's very pristine. I grew up in the Cotswolds until I was about 15. I grew up in a house that my parents bought for £25,000. That was 1,000 times more than my first course was at the pub. So quite cheap. To give it some perspective, Jeremy Clarkson lived in it, the house before he lives in now. It was actually a huge Georgian house with a cottage. So I suspect we're talking about sort of mid early 70s, £25,000 for, I think it had seven bedrooms. It certainly had 8 acres. It would be worth millions now. It's a very different thing. It, you know, back there, the advert in Country Life would say in the centre of the Heathrop Hunt. Now it would say it's near Soho Farmhouse. Everything has changed. I think Norfolk is, again, very popular. There's a lot of people who have become very interested around Somerset, around the Newt, which is kind of a little bit like the Cotswolds. I think it's important that you can get there. You know, the great thing about the Cotswolds is it's very, very beautiful. It's quite easy to get to. There are amazing pubs and things like that now. And you can have an incredibly exciting time in the Daylesford car park.
We know that the countryside is hugely important to all of us, whether we live there or not. Should the government and other bodies be doing more to protect it? What do you think is the biggest threat to our rural areas at present?
Well, it's a fascinating question, that, because it's very interesting. The most watched programme on the BBC most weeks is not EastEnders, it's something called Countryfile. The biggest membership organisation in Europe is the National Trust, with 6 million members, which is largely used by people to go and walk their dogs and things like that. My magazine, Country Life, has been more successful than, frankly, any other magazine over the last decade or so. And they've all got one sort of thing. It's all about the countryside. Now, where governments think about the countryside is they don't think they're going to win an election in the countryside. There aren't enough votes in the countryside. And the votes that there are tend to historically anyway, have voted for the Conservative Party. However, the interest in the countryside, the passion for it, which is not just made up, it is because people watch all these shows like Lambing Live and, you know, Spring Watch and things like that. There is a momentum of feeling that the countryside matters. The problem that's happened is that there's lots of people, lots and lots and lots of people interested in it. Nobody can quite work out what to do. I mean, DEFRA sort of hasn't quite sorted out its payments since we left Europe. It's all very complicated, the balance between growing food and improving the environmental side of things. But we did a survey in Country Life some years ago, so slightly out of date, but 2/3 of the population, when asked, said they would like to live in the countryside if they could. Only 18% actually do live in the countryside. So we have a passion for the countryside. You know, it starts really from Victoria, you know, buying Victoria and Albert, buying Balmoral, and then Sandringham. Sandringham was really bought to try and get the future Edward VII away from the flesh pots of London and give him something to do in the countryside. But Britain has a unique affection for the countryside. If you think of any of our great writers, whether it's the Bronte sisters or Jane Austen or Du Maurier or Hardy, and of course, you know where you are in Britain. Britain has a sort of different feel to it to any other country. Somebody once said, everyone wants to live in the countryside in Britain. The only people who want to live in the French countryside are the British. We have a different relationship with it to other countries.
So you would say that politicians need to take that mindset very seriously. Right, that's a clue for anybody currently writing a manifesto for any of the main parties. Now, before we let you go, Andrew, what's your pitch to townies thinking about the country but worrying about trains, strikes and missing the bright lights? When somebody in that situation approaches you, what do you say to them?
In short, I think you need to experience it. It's very rare that there are major disruptions in terms of communication links. Very rarely do we hear when people move down to our neck of the woods, they regret it. But you do have to embrace it and enjoy it and throw yourselves into every opportunity there is.
So the message is go wild in the country and love it for all its imperfections, but also for its beauties. And Mark, my last question to you is, we've all heard your great passion for the country, but actually, are you at heart somebody who actually dreams of the bright lights?
No, definitely not. I did have a little period in London, as lots of people do. I grew up, as I said earlier, in the Cotswolds. My parents moved to Sussex, and I boomeranged back to the countryside as soon as I had children. It's sort of, for people like me, it's like a middle class crop rotation. You sort of start in one place, go to London, and then you come back to the countryside. And I think I've never felt that I've lived in London, although I was there. It was a bit like boarding school, something that you had to get through. Whereas the countryside is joyous. It is fantastic. It is different. It is either too noisy or too quiet for some people. But I am a proper country boy. And, I managed to edit a magazine for almost 20 years just on the endless fascination that we have in Britain for our extraordinary countryside.
I'm afraid that's all we've got time for. Let's shake the mud off our boots and say thank you to Dominic, Andrew and Mark for this great rural ride in this episode of The Property Exchange. Thanks all three of you for your insights and your style guidance. And do subscribe and join us for next month's podcast.
This has been the Property Exchange podcast. For more information, go to winkworth.co.uk or find us on Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. The producer was Tom Maddox. For more episodes, make sure to subscribe to your favourite podcast provider.